This is a podcast from Jayhawkslant.com, the authority when it comes to KU Jayhawk news. If you want the inside scoop, you are in the right place. Jayhawk Slant is your unofficial but very official source, no matter if it's on or off the record. Basketball editor Shea Wildebor delivers all of your news on the hardwood. Jayhawkslant.com publisher John Kirby brings you the inside info on football. And Randy Withers is the jack of all trades. Now, here is the staff from Jayhawkslant.com.
Well, we put ourselves in a great position, you know, up three with four to play. We're not going to take it for granted and everything, but certainly with a different outcome, you're up one with four to play. So I'm really proud of our guys and how hard they compete. You know, this team has beaten one, two, four, and it's incredible to me. And three of the four wins were away from home. So I'm happy that we're in a good position in the league race, but I think we should just enjoy this and rest a little bit.
Hey, everybody, this is Randy Withers, and that was Bill Self talking about the Jayhawks opening up a three-game lead in the Big 12 with Saturday's big win over Baylor. Welcome into the latest edition of the Jayhawk Slant podcast. We're going to talk basketball, the Big 12 conference race, some recruiting, take some podcast questions from our subscribers, and then move to the football side, where we'll be joined by new Kansas offensive coordinator Doug Meacham in what I believe will be his first time on the record since he arrived at KU. But first, I've got to welcome in the Joint Chiefs of Jayhawk Nation to talk about it all. Let's start with basketball expert Shea Wildebor. Shea, how you doing tonight?
I'm hanging on, man. How are you?
I'm better than I was a couple days ago. I know Kirby wanted to do this thing a couple days ago, and I was like, whoa, I wasn't feeling good at all yesterday, but you had it a lot worse than I did.
It's a struggle, man. I'm excited to be here, but my bed is calling me for sure.
Next up, let's say hello to our man on the football scene and publisher of Jayhawk Slant, John Kirby. Kirby, how are you this fine President's Day?
Man, I'll tell you what. We got to get some guys who can play through injuries here. You two guys are like questionable and doubtful. I got to get you guys up out of your beds to do the podcast. But hey, I'm glad to be here, glad to do it. And I think we got some good stuff coming up.
I think you're right. I think this is going to be a very good addition to the Slant podcast. We'll begin on the hardwood, where the Jayhawks may have cemented their 13th straight Big 12 Conference Championship on Saturday. Shea, as we get going, I want to play a clip from Bill Self talking about his squad after they took down Baylor.
But as far as a mental toughness team, yeah, I would take this team and go to the house and let it ride wherever, however it goes. I think tonight, I could be wrong, I think it's 2:43 left and we're down six coming out of timeout. We got to have great possessions. Is that about right? Got to have great possessions every time. And these guys did it. So, of course, we defended unbelievable down the stretch.
All right, Shea, you've been covering Bill Self's program since the day he arrived on Mount Oread. Is this one of the toughest KU teams mentally that you can remember?
Absolutely. And, you know, I was talking with Coach about this yesterday. I had the privilege of attending a Special Olympics clinic in Lawrence. And listen to this stat that I kind of came up with. From the start of Big 12 play, including Kentucky, this Kansas team has been down by nine or more points nine times. Okay, nine times. Of those deficits, they've come back to win eight times with five coming on the road. I mean, just think about that. Nine or more points, wow. Nine times. They've won eight of those games with five coming on the road.
That's, listen, wow.
Yeah, you go into Kentucky, you're down by 12 points on the road. Big primetime game. ESPN's in the house. Ashley Judd is there doing her thing. You got recruits everywhere, top five, top 10. It gets no bigger. Kansas goes in and makes a big-time statement. You know, now, you're down double digits. You're down double digits in Manhattan. And I don't care what the talent level is there. For anybody that's been to Manhattan when Kansas is in town, it gets no bigger. I've always said this, and I'll go on record as saying it now. Aside from Allen Fieldhouse, when Kansas is in Manhattan, I don't know if there's a better arena in the Big 12. They bring it when Kansas is in town. And then Baylor again on Saturday. Listen, Baylor had a chance to make a huge statement. at home against Kansas. I mean, it was right there for the taking. KU loses that game, and we're having a completely different conversation. Kansas
Absolutely.
Goes in there with a packed house, down six with, what, 3 minutes to go?
Mm-hmm.
What do they do? Close out. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, it's the things that this team has done with the limited amount of depth they have, with, you know, with Frank playing his close to 40 minutes, with Devontae playing his, you know, his close to 35, 37 minutes. Josh Jackson, I don't care how good he is, you still have to make the adjustment, from high school to college. You know, Landon Lucas, who was battling injuries early on, and, you know, I know a lot of people were kind of not down on him, but wondering if he would be able to play the way he played last year. You know, Carlton going through his things, and coach kind of just cementing things together. I mean, what they've done this year is just, it's amazing. I mean, that stat to me kind of really says it all. I mean, they just continue to get it done time and time and time again. And to me, that's the measure of a champion. You know, it's not – everybody gets excited when times are good, but when it's really when times are bad and your back is up against the wall, and how do you respond? And there's no doubt in my mind that when March comes around, this team will have faced everything that they need to face, and, you know, nothing will surprise them.
You talk about March and the fact that they've seen so much already, and like you said, come from behind, you know, been down in nine games. What does it say about this team and the talent level that they never seem to be out of it, no matter what the deficit looks like?
These guys are tough. I think it all starts with Frank. I mean, this is a guy, I think Coach Brad Underwood said it best, Oklahoma State head coach, after the game here in Lawrence. You know, Oklahoma State had KU down, I think, I want to say 10 or 12 points, and he just looked up at the media and said, hey, Frank Mason absolutely refuses to let this team lose. And I think that's, you know, it doesn't matter how much he's struggling. Look at the West Virginia game last week, down 14 with under 3 minutes. Are you kidding me? He struggled all game, and then all of a sudden, kind of towards the end, you start hitting shots, you start feeling confident, you hit some free throws, there's some misses off the free throw line by West Virginia, and I mean, these guys are just tough. Devontae Graham, again, who's struggled again Saturday at Baylor. You know, they are able. It's like next play. When you're quarterback, you throw that interception, you got to forget about it. And with this team, I think everybody does that. It doesn't matter if you miss a key free throw late. You know, if you let a rebound slip out of bounds, if you miss a shot, if you miss two shots. This team is always thinking next play. They forget about the bad, just kind of try to focus on what needs to happen next. And it's just amazing. You're down 14 with 3 minutes to go, and you find, I don't care if you're home, on the road, neutral setting. I mean, that's just, that doesn't happen. I mean, to me, that's just the mark of a team that believes until there's all zeros on the clock that they've got a chance. And this team certainly, they've proven that time and time again, that they, until the final buzzer sounds, they believe they can win. And that's contagious. I mean, that's, you go down the line and you look at it, different guys make different plays. Saturday, Landon Lucas, who'd struggled from the line all year, this team all year has struggled. He steps up and hits two major free throws that, you know, I'm not for sure 10 days ago we would have hit. Again, you just forget about it, move on, and I think this team has that characteristic without question.
Shea, you talk about being able to focus on the next thing and just moving on. Speaking of that, what do you expect out of this squad heading into these last four conference games of the Big 12 schedule? And do you expect some of them to finally be able to get a little bit of rest as Self and the guys try to close out number 13?
If I know Coach the way I think I do know, he might try to get him extra spots here and there. But listen, this is the last go-around for a lot of these guys. I mean, depending on what happens, I mean, you know, Mason's going to be gone. Landon will be gone. Josh Jackson will be gone. And I think, obviously, you know, the top overall number one seed, obviously, this year gets to select the region they want to go in. So there's still a lot to play for. I mean, if you could set it up perfectly to where you want to go, my guess is that happens anyway with this team. But, just to kind of – the opportunity to set your own path, I think they'll want to finish strong. You know, the last thing you want to do, especially at this stage in the game, is, you know, stumble down. You played so well to get these wins. You know, you've done everything you can. You've sacrificed. The last thing you want to do now is kind of get that mentality, hey, let's get some rest, stumble here, stumble there. I think you want to finish strong, and no matter what that means, if it means the guys continue playing their minutes, then I would expect that to happen. I just don't see Coach now kind of pulling the reins back. you know, when there's still so much to accomplish. I mean, at the end of the last year, the Villanova game, the goal for this year's team was quite clear. And, you know, I wasn't, to be honest with you, I wasn't sure how they would respond, especially, you know, when Doak got hurt in early and, you know, Carlton's had his struggles. But, you know, they're in a spot now to where they can, you know, they can get to where they want to get to. And I would expect them to kind of keep the foot on the gas and keep marching forward.
Shay, I want to switch gears a little bit. Earlier you mentioned, you said a little something about being able to attend the Special Olympics basketball clinic yesterday. That's a very special event. Tell us a little bit about that. What was that like?
It was awesome, man. If you're having a bad day and you get a chance to go up there, you're not having a bad day anymore. The smiles. And the thing about it is, you know, the kids and everybody involved is going to be involved in it. But it's great to see the players, the coaching staff, everybody associated with Kansas basketball giving hugs, giving high fives, encouraging kids, you know, participating in drills. It's refreshing. It's probably one of the coolest things that I've seen. You know, Coach had even said yesterday, you know, he had forgotten about it. And he went to the guys on the bus ride home and said, hey, we've got this. You know, we've got the Special Olympics clinic coming up. You guys, you know, you need to be prepared Sunday. We got to do this. And, you know, all the guys that had done it before, that had participated in years past, were fired up. I mean, it couldn't happen soon enough. And to me, that speaks a lot about this team, these guys. I mean, I know a lot's been written, a lot's been said about maybe some of the character of these guys, but, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that every one of these guys, we've all been kids one time. We've all made mistakes. But at the end of the day, these guys are first-class guys, and for them to put in the time that they have and to really make it mean something to those kids, to me, it was refreshing, and it was just a really joy to be a part of. This has actually been my first one I've ever attended, and to see the looks, not only on the kids' faces, but of the players' faces and the coaching staff, I mean, it was truly an honor to be a part of something like that, and just to kind of see how involved those guys are and how much it means to those kids that participated.
That sounds awesome. Sounds like just a tremendous event and a chance to see guys in kind of a different element.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So switching gears a little bit again, this seems to be about the time of year with scholarships still left available that everybody wants to know who is left on the board for Coach Self and this staff and who is no longer an option at this point for the Jayhawks. What's the latest with recruiting, Shay, and what players are you tracking at this point?
Well, you know, there's a handful of guys, or I should say less than a handful of guys. I think, Randy, that one of the biggest things you'll want to look forward to, obviously, you've got Trevin Duvall, the five-star point guard out in Florida. The staff was out to see him last week. With the news of Trey Young deciding to go to Oklahoma, you know, I expect them to put the full-court press on him. Everything I've gathered is that it's going to be a Kansas-Duke battle. Has he gone on record and said that? Absolutely not. But just from talking to the people in the industry, talking to people I trust, you know, it looks like it's going to be a battle between the Blue Bloods, Kansas and Duke. He's been to Kansas twice, was in Lawrence for late night, and then came returned again, I believe, for the Baylor game. He's been to Duke. Looks like he's maybe going to schedule a visit to Arizona. And aside from that, you know, I don't know if Seton Hall or Baylor have been scheduled yet. I don't know if those will. Another guy to keep your eye on is Mark Smith, a 6'4 kind of combo guard from Edwardsville, Illinois. Was originally committed to play baseball at Missouri. You know, suffered
That's
an injury,
an interesting
I believe,
one.
To Yes, absolutely right. I believe suffered an injury to his forearm. You know, ultimately opted to back out of that commitment. Got on the hardwood this last spring and summer, and really just played extremely well. As a matter of fact, our national basketball analyst Rivals Eric Bossy bumped him up from, I believe, 0 stars to 3 stars, and then from 3 stars to 4 stars. Now I think he's the 75th best player in the class. And
wow.
He just keeps getting better and better. He's taken 3 official visits already to some, you know, some mid-major schools. He's mm-hmm. got some decisions to make. He recently told me that he's going to take some unofficial visits, and then he'll decide what schools he wants to officially visit. Obviously, an offer from Kansas, you know, the opportunity to come up and take a visit is something he would jump at. It's just a matter of will that door open? You know, at this stage, I don't know, but he's certainly a guy you want to keep your eye on. If things, if things don't turn out with Duvall the way the staff hopes. And another thing, Randy, to kind of keep your eye on as we get to March is, I don't want to say the job the staff has to do recruiting some of these guys to return, because I don't think Bill would ever put that pressure on these guys. But I'll be interested to see, you know, what happens with a Devontae Graham, with a Sviatoslav Mihailuk. And, you know, a year ago at this time, everybody thought that, you know, Carlton Bragg was going to be a guy that would, you know, be back one more year and then, you know, look to make that jump to the NBA. Clearly, to me, he's a guy that's going to, without question, need another year or two. So I think you can kind of put that to the side. But, I mean, what is, you know, what is Devontae Graham going to do? He's a guy that I think by anybody's standards has had a pretty good year. Not the year that he wanted to, and I know that Coach Self has said that on a number of occasions. He's going to have a decision to make. Sviatoslav Mikhailiuk, who started out playing really well early on, is kind of, and everybody does it, he's kind of maybe hit that bump in the road. Hasn't played as well as he probably would have liked to. You know, hit a lot of big shots early on, and you know, right now he's kind of just fighting through that. So that'll be another thing to keep your eye on. Not only guys that they want to sign, that they want to bring in, but guys that they've already got on the roster that could, you know, maybe a few months ago look like maybe they were leaving, but now you kind of wonder and say, hey, you know, is it really a possibility that these guys could come back? And, you know, right now it wouldn't surprise me at all to see Devontae return and Svi return without question. And I think right now, just the way that the season has played out for Carlton, you know, him as well. So it's going to be interesting to see that, you know, how all this plays out and what guys they can bring back in. And you know, because if you return everybody and, you know, you sign a Duvall, you've already got Billy Preston on board and Garrett, you know, you've got another loaded team ready to make a run at number 14.
Shea, we do this on some of the podcasts. Let's answer a couple questions from the message board. First off, Kansas Hawk 86 asks, on their best day, worst day, and average day, what team from years past does this team remind you of and why?
Wow, man, they're bringing it tonight.
That's a good question.
Yeah,
right
that
there.
Is. You know what? And I don't want people to take this out of context or assume that I think that this is going to happen. But I look back at that 2008 team that won the title, and the one thing that team did and the one thing that this team did is all they do is win. I mean, obviously, it's kind of different styles. You look at that 08 team, and I'm doing a little cheating here. I'm just pulling it up. I mean, they had, you know, they beat Arizona early on by 4 points. They won at USC. You know, they won at Georgia Tech. And then in Big 12 play, they kind of, you know, they hammered some folks. They beat Oklahoma by 30, Nebraska 84-49. But another quality of that team was they lost some games that they probably shouldn't have. I mean, you know, you look at the game at Kansas State, they lost pretty convincingly. I mean, 9 points. I don't remember that game ever being, you know, within reach. You know, you lose at number 11 Texas after a game that I think Kansas at the half had out-rebounded, or I'm sorry, at the second half, a player from Texas out-rebounded Kansas all by himself and kind of led them to victory. And then the loss at Oklahoma State, which was the last loss of the season by 1 point. You know, like that team, that you know, that this team, this current team, has lost a game probably they shouldn't have, and they've rebounded with wins extremely well, kind of like that team. Now the question is can this team finish the way that team did? I mean, when they lost that last game in late February at Oklahoma State, they didn't lose again. I mean, they carried it all the way to San Antonio, and you know, this team has proven to have that kind of finishing ability. But when the lights are on and, you know, when the games matter most, will they be able to do that? But it's obviously a completely different roster, completely different roles. But in the sense of the outcome of the seasons, it kind of reminds me a little bit of that 2008 team that cut down the nets.
Talk about finishing ability, Shea. We're going to make you finish with a tough one here. Got one more question from Mum Daddy 86. Chances with center Brandon McCoy, and what's your feel about Trevin Duvall?
With McCoy, I can't even remember the last time that Kansas was even mentioned with McCoy and vice versa. I don't think that's going to happen at all. And with Duvall, you know, I think it's going to be a Kansas Duke battle, and it's one that I could a lot of it depends on, I think, how the rosters shake out. Now, I know Duke has, I don't know Duke's personnel in and out. I know they've got a highly regarded point guard that they brought in last year, Frank Jackson, who probably hasn't seen the time he would have hoped to this year. Now, if he comes back, you know, if they add some other guys in the backcourt, to me, if you look at KU's roster, there is a need right away with Frank Mason leaving. There's no doubt about it. Now, if the coaching staff makes that clear to Duvall and lets him know, hey, we're going to hand you the keys from day one, I you know, saying no, I think, is just going to be a difficult choice for him to make. So, I mean, I think based on with what Kansas has leaving and Frank Mason and the minutes they have available, I you know, I think turning it down would be tough. But I also don't know what Duke's position is with Frayn Jackson and what they have coming back. But at the end of the day, I think it'll be Kansas or Duke, and I certainly like where Kansas stands right now.
Shay, thanks for being with us, man, and fighting through this sickness or whatever it is you've got going on. We'll catch up with you again soon.
All right, man. Thanks a lot, Randy. Have a good night.
That's our man, Shay Will DeBoer. Let's move on over to football and welcome in J.K. Kirby. It has been a little slow on the recruiting trail for the last week. What's going on with that?
No kidding, right? Hey, get rid of Beatty and the staff. Fire them all right now.
They got to go. This is not working out.
Hey, they right now I think they're eighth in the nation in recruiting, so that doesn't cut it. I think by tomorrow, I think you'll have a new head coach in at Kansas.
The program, you know, we've grown to expect bigger things than this. This just isn't going to work.
Yeah, no, this whole thing about no real recruiting news in a week here before spring football starts, that's not going to cut it around here.
No, we know the coaches aren't actually taking any time off, though, with spring practices coming up. And one for sure that isn't is new offensive coordinator Doug Meacham, our special guest tonight on this President's Day edition of the Jayhawk Slant podcast.
We are joined by new KU offensive coordinator and wide receivers coach Doug Meacham. Coach, how you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, man. How you guys doing? It's going great.
All right. Hey, you got all your boxes unpacked and settled in?
Boxes are unpacked. I don't know if it's all settled, but it is unpacked. Yeah.
All right. I got to ask you, first of all, you know, what were some of the factors that brought you to KU?
Well, you know, the biggest thing was just Coach Beatty, what kind of person he was, his leadership, and just really his overall personality and how he deals with players and everybody on a day-to-day basis, and just having known him for 10 or 15 years. And just really around the league, if you talk to coaches in the Big 12, everyone says the same thing. I mean, you know, they think that the arrow here at Kansas is pointing up. And it was just too hard to pass up. You know, he'd asked me before a few years ago, and he asked me again. So I just didn't feel like I felt like I needed to take advantage.
You know, you're no stranger to the Big 12, obviously being at Oklahoma State and TCU. When you were at those places, what was your view on the Kansas program?
Well, I mean, it was always a team that, you know, you would play them. I think sometimes your players kind of have a misconception of what they were in for, you know, because what happened when you played Kansas is, you know, you look at the record and maybe some of the overall statistics and things like that. And, you know, as a kid, you're just like, well, you know, this is going to be an easy one or whatever. And I'll be dadgum if every time you play them, it's a dogfight, it's a war. Every time. So you get a lot of these, you know, you play Kansas and you know one thing's for sure, you're going to be in a fight for four quarters. They're not going to lay down. They're going to give you, you know, a battle. And it's just kind of difficult because young kids at whatever school you're at will look at it like, you know, this is going to be, you know, an easy game. But as a coach, you know, it never was. Even when I was at OSU, we had some of those teams. The last 3 years at TCU, you know, there was a couple of years there we were pretty good. And I think if we hadn't returned punts on you guys on Kansas, we would have lost the game. You know, so that's kind of the general perception of it.
You know, now recruiting's over, and since you've had a chance to get in and get situated, what are you doing right now to get prepared for spring football?
Oh, well, you know, as a staff, the first thing is to go over – you know, to assess what they've done here in the past, assess each player, to do a player profile and, you know, what a kid's dominant traits are, what he needs to improve on, where do you rank him on a scale of 10, you know, just getting to know each individual player and then just kind of taking what they've done and learning what they've done and then trying to integrate kind of what I've done with what they've done here in the past few years and formulate an overall game plan for what we're going to put in the install for spring practice. You know, that's the first things you want to do.
You get 15 practices in the spring, and I know, you know, sometimes, you know, coaches always talk about their, you know, they really are their practices. It's not like fall camp, and sometimes you can't get as much out of as you want. You know, what are your goals? What are you looking to do this spring?
you just really ultimately try to locate, identify your top 11. All right. You try to teach the base offense to the team and have a working knowledge of what, you know, you're trying to do in terms of just, you know, ground zero level schemes, and formulate a base. And as you work through it, the 15 practices, you're not near as concerned about the outcome of a scrimmage or plays as you are as players. You know, you're trying to develop and move ahead in terms of each individual player. And at the same time, you're trying to identify, okay, who's our best 11? And now with that best 11, what is it that we can do within the confines of what, you know, the offense is?
You know, Coach, last question for you. When you went to TCU, obviously you revamped the whole system, what they did there, and had a lot of success with Boykin. And I know you've been part of different offensive schemes. Do you have to wait and see what you have in the spring and then decide what you're going to do? How does that all work?
Yeah, you have to. You actually have to wait beyond spring and probably continue to form an opinion right into 2-a-days. You know, and then I think by the time you get through with your first couple of weeks of 2-a-days and you've gone through the install, I think you have a pretty good working knowledge of what you are. And then from that point on, you know, you're just trying to devise a game plan as to, you know, what you're going to be through the course of the year. You know, and you have to, you know, just like any sport or any, you know, any team, you have to decide, okay, who's your quarterback? What is his dominant trait? What does he do well? And develop it kind of around that, you know.
Great stuff. Well, Coach, I know you said you're still in the office at 6:30 in the evening doing work, so I really appreciate you joining us here. We look forward to talking to you in spring football.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call and look forward to everything. Thank you.
That was new offensive coordinator Doug Meacham talking about what he expects this spring and in some insight on how he's going to install his offense here in Lawrence. Kirby, let's move on over to recruiting. Really, the only thing that's been new since we talked last is the commitment of Cartez Crook-Jones, the big defensive end from Grandview, and then the news of a couple players from Louisiana who have decided they want to slow things down and look around a little bit. Tell us what's going on.
Well, with Nelson Jenkins, you know, he's a defensive tackle. And this is one of those deals that Tony Hall knew about that nobody else did at the time. And I really believe, and I'm not saying it's 100% fact, but when you look at the offers when he committed to Kansas, he didn't have a long list of offers. I want to say his best one may have been Georgia Tech, and he picked Kansas.
Right.
Yeah, and he didn't visit. He didn't come to Lawrence on an unofficial visit like all the other guys did. You know, this kid was an interesting story. He's got to take like an hour bus ride to school. He lives out in the country. So, you know, LSU came in and offered him a scholarship. I'm sorry, but, you know, if LSU goes in and offers a kid a scholarship, he flipped right there on that day. But here's the good news about this, Randy. It tells you that Kansas is on the right guys, because when Nelson Jenkins committed, I know there are a lot of people that are going, who is this guy? I know there were guys down in the SEC territory saying they'd never heard of him. Well, obviously, he's pretty decent because LSU doesn't take a lot of defensive tackles a year early. And then you had Jamar Chase, a four-star wide receiver. I think a lot of that came down to, you know, he told me Kansas is still very high on his list, and they're going to be in there with him. But he came to the visit with his dad. His mom didn't get a chance to come. And I think this is going to be a deal where I think it's going to be a family thing. And I think the mom would like to go on the visit, you know, and see what's going on. So for the time being, he pulled back. He's going to stay uncommitted and give it, you know, give the family a chance to get involved. And, you know, those are the two guys that have decommitted. And, you know, it's one of those things. You know, it's going to happen. It happens to every school, especially on these early commitments. But, hey, I'll turn it around and look at some positive news. I know you had a chance to interview Cartez Crook-Jones. Talk a little bit about him. That was a big commitment.
He was very, very excited. He felt the love right off the bat. I mean, he talked about how it just felt like home to him. And he's a guy that was very close to committing before he left campus. But as he talked about in our interview, you can tell by reading his comments, his mother, I mean, everybody's mom's is special to him, but he has a very close relationship with his mother, and he wanted her to have a chance to come down and come to Lawrence and have that face-to-face conversation with the man who's going to really be looking out for and taking care of him for the next 4 or 5 years of his life before he made his commitment to the Jayhawks. And I think, Kansas is getting a good one. They're getting a big, explosive, athletic defensive end, and it's very clear that the staff, when it comes to edge rushers, they have a type. They like that Dorrance Armstrong, that Isaiah Bean, that long, athletic, explosive kid that may be a little bit raw from a technique standpoint, but somebody that they can develop, that they can mold. They can teach him the finer techniques of rushing the quarterback or of taking on an offensive tackle, but that burst off the line, that's God-given. And those are the kind of guys that they've been able to find, and it looks like Kartez Crook-Jones is just another one of them.
Well, you know, I know you and I talked about this. We felt good about it because right off of his junior day visit, he kind of let us know he was going to be making another trip back up with his mother. And when that happens, you start to feel pretty good about things.
Yep. And that's exactly what happened. I was texting with him that night, and I kind of let you know. I was like, he was just talking about how excited he was. And I finally texted him. I was like, are you trying to tell me something here? And kind of like I said in our last episode, no, I'm, nothing going on here, nothing to see. And it was very clear that there was. And I was very appreciative and very excited the fact that he was able to talk with us and tell us really why this was such a, it was an emotional thing for him, like it is with a lot of high school kids when they're making that decision. But he is very excited. He believes in what this coaching staff is doing, and he loves the idea of being a part of this turnaround. And kind of like he said, he's a guy that if he can come in and do the kind of things they expect and earn it. And he said, I've got to earn it. But he's somebody that thinks he could have an opportunity to play early. So it great get for the Jayhawks, I think, at this point. Let's take some questions. Shay and I already did it earlier. Now it's your turn. We're going to take some questions from folks on the message board. Let's start with Hawk Will, who asks, can you talk about the importance of year three of a new coaching regime and give us some insight as to what you're seeing from David Beatty and his staff?
Well, if I look at year three, and I'll do this, I'll compare it to years one and two. And again, I get to know some of these coaches, and some of them can become friends, and this is no slight on coaches who've been here and no longer here. But year three right now, I would say this is the best staff Beatty's put together. I mean, I think things are settling in. Obviously, getting Doug Meacham was huge. I mean, to get a guy like that has that type of experience and definitely knows the offensive styles in the Big 12, and he has an idea of what Beatty has, you know, tried to implement here at Kansas. So I think right now, when you look at it, Joe DeForest, great job with special teams. Plus, he gives you another set of eyes on defense. You know, he even told me at one point he was helping out when he wasn't doing special teams with the defensive line. So, you know, this is the best. Yeah, this is the best staff that I think right now on paper that Beatty's had. Now, obviously, you know, they've got to get together and gel and work together. But I really like this staff, and it'll also be interesting to see what he can do here with the strength and conditioning job.
I think, you know, with your exposure to the staff, this next question from Gizmos04 is a good one. Do you, you know, talking with them, does the staff believe a 10th coach in an early signing period could be approved?
Well, I've talked to people even outside of Kansas about this, and you know it's on hold right now. So they were talking about doing this 10th coach, and I know that there are staffs out there who I believe were already making moves to get their 10th guy in line, whether he was coming, you know, whether he was coming from another school or whether he was currently on staff. I think guys had their 10th coach in mind. So
no
with
doubt.
With the NCAA coming in now and saying we could table this thing 2018, there's part of me that wonders, are they doing this because someone like an Alabama or a Florida State, that's a big school that has some money, can they poach some coaches from other schools, because I know the spirit of this isn't to take coaches from other schools and then leave holes on their staffs. So I'm curious as to the late decision about pushing this thing off on the early signing period. I think that's going to go down for sure. Now, I don't know. I don't think the summer one will, just because coaches are going to want time to, you know, get out and have vacations with their families and recharge their batteries and get out of the office. But I think that December one will be, you know, that I think that one will go into effect, which is going to help a lot, Randy, because what that does, and I don't think a lot of people really know this. I've had a lot of coaches tell me that they spend more time keeping a kid committed than the effort it took to get them to commit in the first place. Well, when you also look at that, you look at January. So let's say you get a kid and you get him to commit in October, November, December. Well, then you're going back to his house and meeting with his family two or three times in the month of January to make sure nobody's snooping around. You're trying to fight off all the other guys that are coming in. And not only that, you're spending a lot of money. All the flights to those places. I mean, if you've got 20 kids committed and you're sending all your coaches out to keep those kids committed, I'll tell you right now, I'll tell you who will vote on that rule is athletic directors. They're going to think, hey, I'm going to save all kinds of money on hotels and rental cars and flights all over the place. And so this early signing period, I think, will calm things down. And I think that will happen. But I don't think the summer one that was talked about will.
I think you've got a great point there. I think the amount of money that universities and football programs could save just in what is, in essence, babysitting money is, I think it could be a pretty significant amount of money when you talk about the impact of that rules change and what it could be. And I think you're right. I think it's going to be the ADs that really push for that one.
Well, hey, think about this, too, that if a kid is committed to you, okay, let's say he commits in September. And let's say that December 15th date comes around. You send him that LOI, and the kid says, hey, I'm not ready to sign. I really want to sign on the February date. I want to do a big, you know, ceremony at my school or whatever it is. Well, now that's warning bells going off. Now, all of a sudden, if you're a college football coach, you're saying, okay, this kid that's been committed with us isn't ready to sign on the 15th of December. That means we've got to start looking. We got to keep building our board. So, you know, it also helps some coaches to find out who's serious about them as well.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to take two questions now from Joe Lebo, and I'll be real honest, I'm surprised that these aren't split up with either GIFs, video clips, or random photos like he normally puts in on the board. Number one from Joe Lebo, what are you hearing from other rivals moderators about what David Beatty is doing in terms of recruiting and selling the Kansas program?
Hey, that's a great question. And back during that week where Kansas got all the commitments for the 2018 class, I'll tell you, my text messages and phone, it was going off. I mean, from people, some I haven't talked to in a long time, and they're like, wow, what is going on up at Kansas? And how is Beatty doing this? And, you know, Beatty is one of those guys. When people who watch him in an interview, I'll get emails or text after an interview, like on a national show or something. They'll go, hey, I really like that Beatty. You know, it's like a lot of people don't really know a lot about the Kansas program. Well, this early start to the 2018 recruiting season has put a spotlight on KU. So it's a good question from Jalebo. I mean, we've had a lot more interest that I've seen from analysts and people who are in the network, and even people who don't follow KU football have, I think, started to take a little bit more of an interest in it.
Number two from Joe Lebo, what are you hearing from other high school head coaches, Kansas, Missouri, all over the metro area about the overall efforts of this staff?
Well, Randy, you and I both talk to coaches from the state and from the city.
Yes,
and
we do.
I think the one thing that I'm really starting to see now is coaches out there are giving compliments. They've seen the work that they've done on the local front. They've, you know, we've talked about this several times, the Kansas Blast. And I think David Beatty and his staff, they had 100 people up at the coaches clinic this Friday. You know, they didn't do it on Saturday, you know, obviously in honor of Coach Driscoll and his family's, you know, with the with the funeral and everything on Saturday. It was just a one-day clinic. But, you know, it was well attended, and there was a lot of local coaches there. And I've had a lot of people say, man, I had a chance to be around the Kansas staff. I like what they have to say. I like those guys. They're all good guys. So on the local front, I think they're starting to chip away a little bit.
I think you're right. You know, when you talk with the coaches around the metro area and you talk with the kids as well, many of them will tell you, be like, wow, the kids specifically, I hear from the staff all the time. You know, I get in, they're talking to me, they're reaching out, and or they're talking to my head coach, and it's really, it seems as if the staff realizes what an opportunity there is in the metro area right now. And I know it's something we've talked about before, and I've talked about it a lot with a lot of people, that the Kansas City metro area, there is, with the uncertainty surrounding the Kansas State program and just how much longer Bill Snyder is going to coach, especially with the revelation here in the last couple weeks of his throat cancer diagnosis and him receiving treatment at KU Med, that's a big factor for a lot of kids and a lot of parents right now in the metro area. You don't hear a lot of talk about K-State right now. When you talk about Missouri, you know, they just had their big event where they brought a bunch of kids in that are the top 10 players in Missouri that they've offered. But after last year, when they only took one kid in state, there are a lot of coaches and kids in Kansas City that took notice of that and stepped back and said, what, now that you're in the SEC, you're going to abandon Kansas City? And I think what it is the KU staff is realizing there are schools, there are relationships that they've worked to build. There are kids that are starting to pay attention now that realize that there's real opportunity. There's opportunity to play, opportunity to play close to home, and a program that is riding some real momentum. We keep talking about that win over Texas and the performance in Manhattan, a gritty, tough effort against K-State that I think announced to a lot of people, hey, this is not the same old KU. And people have kind of started to take notice of that. And the staff is taking advantage of that momentum. And I think the area coaches are hearing from them. Kids are hearing from them. And there's a buzz. I mean, we saw it with the kids, the local kids coming out of the first junior day of the year, that kids are really being receptive to what they're hearing from the Kansas coaching staff right now. And I think that that momentum is really going to carry them forth into what could be a big summer season in regards to camps. And if they can get off to a good start next season, who knows how big this thing could get?
Yeah. You know, it's a snowball effect, and like anything, you know, it takes time. You know, there was a lot of talk from local coaches that when Beatty came in, you know, they felt that they weren't getting a lot of the attention from the previous staffs at Kansas locally. And it just takes time and building those relationships. It doesn't happen overnight. And I know when that Kansas blast started, I heard a couple smart ass remarks from people that like, oh, what's this Kansas blast? Well, you know what?
Yep.
Here we are going into year three. And I think some of those things are starting to pay off a little bit.
I agree. I mean, some of the coaches that I've talked to around the state, you know, and not just here in the Kansas City area, but in different, you know, down towards Wichita, in Topeka, they've talked about it. They've seen more of the Kansas staff. They've seen more from KU in the last year and a half than they did maybe in the last 5 or 6 years prior. So they've got it going in the right direction, and it is making an impact with the coaches in not just in Kansas, but in Kansas City and in Missouri. All right, Kirby, our last question comes from Jay Kringer, or I always look at it and I think it says J.K. Ringer, so this may be the guy that's going for your job. What are your pre-spring win expectations for next season? I kind of want to say 5 to 6 wins, but feel like 4 is the most likely. What's your thought on this?
You know, if you had to pin me down, you know, what the Vegas number was still 1.5 last year, I think. You know, for me, I would say 4 to 5. And I know, hey, David Beatty would probably be pissed if he heard somebody say the goal's 4 wins, okay? But when I look at it, and I've seen Kansas football come from where they are, when they get down low and have to build up, what you're looking for is progress, okay? And this year they got 2. They had 0 the year before. If they could go back and get 4 wins, and I know there are going to be people that say, hey, I want more than 4. But if you look at 4, okay, maybe 2 or 3 non-cons, maybe 1 or 2 in the conference, maybe they get a road win, get off that schneid. So that's progress to me. And what that does is progress keeps people coming back, all right? Because I can see the momentum. I've heard the I've heard the season ticket sales, even with some of these commitments when it happened. The season ticket sales were starting to go up. The ticket office phones were ringing a little more. So I would say if you could go 4-5, and I'm talking baby steps here, okay? I'm not jumping into that magic 6 number yet. But if you can do 4-5, now you're showing everybody, hey, the progress is there, and this thing is continuing to go in the right direction.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Jayhawk Slant podcast. Be sure and stay logged into the Slant for all the latest news as we head toward Big 12 tournament time and the beginning of March Madness, as well as the start of spring football practice for David Beatty and the Jayhawks. We'll keep everyone informed, and be sure and keep your eye out for the next time we're in the studio with the next edition of the Jayhawk Slant podcast. For John Kirby and Shea Wildebor, this is Randy Withers. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.